It won't work. It won't work. It won't work. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Capocorro, California, with Thought for Today. It won't work. It won't work. Instinct has ruled the animal culture forever. Instinct has ruled man, humanity, men, women, children, forever. Past experiences are what are keeping us from ever going on to new experiences. We are programmed into lots of things by our education and so forth, and there's no chance of making a change. There's no chance of putting a different cause in motion. There's no chance. So, it won't work. So, that's my talk for today. However, you like howevers? Mm-hmm. However, I was looking at the dog whisperer, as I am wont to do once in a while, and Caesar, good trainer, he took this dog and brought it among a bunch of other dogs, and the dog was going to tear the other dogs apart, a pit bull, you know, just going to rip them to pieces. And the lady says, "Don't let him do that." You know. And Caesar says, "You may come and see what I'm doing, but do not have any feelings. Do not have any emotions. Do not look at the dog in the eyes, any of the dogs. And do not pet them or reach out to them. They're not going to be hurt, but just be aware. Just observe." So the lady observed. And as she observed, she saw Caesar take this pit bull in with other dogs, and they were ready to have a knockdown fight, really tear each other to pieces. And Caesar took his leg and put it in front of the dog, not to kick the dog or hurt the dog, but just to gently touch the dog like this here, you know, just like a gentle touch. But this leg is down where the dog is. By the time you reached over to where the dog is, he'd have a big trip. So he just reached over this leg and touched the dog. The dog looked up. Oh, somebody's trying to be in control of me. And so Caesar says mentally, "That's right, I'm in control of you. I'm your master." And the dog says, "Oh, no, you aren't. Nobody's my master. I'm my own master." And it began to act very belligerent and very angry. And so Caesar, in a very swift, gentle move, reached down and laid the dog on his side. And the dog looked up at Caesar and said, "Master, you have finally come. You know, I have found someone who cares enough about me to, you know, be top dog, what do you call it, the alpha dog." And then Caesar let go, and as soon as the dog got right again, he felt he was going to go and be his instinctual mean self. And Caesar again rolled him over and said, "No, no." Well, this happened once or twice, not often. And the dog soon figured out that what Caesar wanted was what Caesar got. And it wasn't mean. It wasn't hard. It wasn't tough on him. It was just Caesar was the boss. So this dog, who was a pit bull, who was trained by years and years and years of training in breeding in the idea that it's a vicious dog, because it's not a vicious dog. Nothing is vicious. It's trained into us one way or another by our parents, by our environment, by our experience, or whatever. Well, Caesar is training love into all the animals that he deals with. So he said to the dog, "You big sissy, you big teddy bear, you know, you're a lover. Don't go give me that nonsense." And the pit bull looked up and, "Yeah, you know, you understand me. I don't have to fight anymore. I don't have to be angry. I don't have to put on a show." And so, but he always does it. He always does it, his mistress said. And Caesar says, "That was yesterday. We live in the now. If we were held accountable for our yesterdays, we had been cavemen at one time. If we had been held accountable for our yesterday, just as long as a day or two ago, when we didn't have manners, now we have manners. A few days ago, we were not trained to be lovers." Trained to be lovers? Right. Because if you're in an environment where everybody is growling at you, and you don't know how to be a lover, you can't change that environment because you just join it. Well, this is what was being taught. Now, these dogs are intractable. They're unable to be trained. They're totally unable to be trained. They're so vicious, they're so mean, you have to put them down. Well, Caesar comes along and he says, "I have never met a bad boy. I've never met a bad dog." He didn't say that, but I'm sure he would. He's never met a bad dog, because every dog Caesar meets, he falls in love with him. He doesn't fall in love with him. He's in love with him from before he even sees him, and because he's in love with himself. And then he brings these dogs out and trains them. Now, Caesar has a 4-year-old son and a 6-year-old son, I believe, something of that nature, and his wife. And they help him train the dogs, because, I mean, he's made quite a big deal of this. So, they take this utterly vicious, leg-snapping, jaw-dropping dog, terrible thing, just a terrible, terrible dog. And Caesar works with that dog and trains him. He trains him with love, he trains him with discipline, he trains him so the dog doesn't have to be nervous. The dog doesn't have to be tense. The dog doesn't have to have feelings of anxiety. And all of those feelings, nervous, tense, and anxiety, and so on, make him unstable, unpredictable, because he's going to protect himself. Now, what Caesar does is he implants in the animal the idea of self-confidence, the idea of loving itself and loving its world. And there's nothing to fear. There's nothing to fear. Caesar walks around, and if some dog is offensive to the other dog, he immediately does this. He had one woman walking by a used car lot, which was open without a fence on it. And in the used car lot was a
pincher,
a Doberman pincher. But this is a big pincher. It's a big pincher. Big Doberman pincher. And he looked like he's in charge. But he was the guard dog for the gate. But there's no gate. But the guard dog keep people out of those cars when the salesmen weren't around. So this dog saw this lady and Caesar walk by with a dog. And the lady said, "I'd be scared." So she says, "I'm with you. Don't be scared." So they looked at the dog, and the dog was looking at them. And Caesar said, "If the dog is looking at you, don't walk away, he'll follow you. If the dog is not looking at you, you can walk away and he won't follow you." So the lady was looking at the dog, and then Caesar walked over to the dog and said, "You're a pussycat." And the dog sort of curled down and said, "Yeah, how did you know, you know?" And he went behind a little sign there, not big enough to hide him, you know. "I'm hiding behind this tree. You can't see me." But and he was sort of just down. He wasn't hiding. He was just back there because it was protective, you know. And then Caesar said, "Okay." So the dog laid down and looked the other way, and the lady walked away, and the dog didn't chase him. And she said, "Oh, my goodness sakes." You know, Now, she understood, he understood dog psychology, and he told her dog psychology. So therefore, she was able to benefit from it. Now, you, all of you, are lazy. And I mean that in the strongest way I can say that. You're lazy. And you will die early deaths. You will die perhaps when you are 26 or 27, because you're 25 now, you know. You'll die when you're about 26 or 27. And I'm not kidding you. You'll die. You will die, and you will be a walking nothing. Because you have no interest in life. Because you're living in yesterday, you're living in the past, and as long as you live in the past, you're dead. You are dead. And most people live in the past. They keep living in the past again and again and again and again and again. Okay, now. How can you live in the present? Well, now, Beatrice, how did your mother cook the lamb chops that she made? She told you how to cook them, and her recipe was so delicious, remember?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now, Beatrice, have you ever made them yourself?
Yes.
Now, Beatrice, when you made them, did you say these are just like mother made? When you made them, did your husband eat them?
Yes.
And when your husband ate them, he said, Beatrice, these chops are delicious. You are a wonderful cook. Did you say, oh, that's my mother's recipe. Oh, that's the recipe my mother had back in '06 and stuff like that. And that's the recipe that came from my great-grandmother. And that recipe... Now, that's not living in the now, is it? In fact, that's sickening. Who gives a hoot and holler in hell where the recipe came from? It's good, and you're eating it now, and you're enjoying it. Now, is that your recipe? Yes, because you made it. Now, that you copied it from a book or that you did whatever, you made it. And I can assure you, I happen to know you, if you copied it from the book, it was not exact. Mm-hmm. You put a little of this and a little of that in there that you thought would make it even better. Yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. You didn't even follow the recipe from the book. So it's not your grandma's recipe, not your mama's recipe. It's not the past. It is the now. And when we begin to live in the now, we have great adventures. And when we have great adventures, life is exciting, and we're living, we're alive. You see, death is when you cease to live in the now. Death is when you live in the past. Death is when you watch the old movie pictures, and you say, oh, that was from way back when. That was... No way. When you watch that moving picture, if it is a thriller or whatever, if it is a well-done motion picture, it is as valid today as the day it was made. And it can capture your attention and make you think that you are right there in that movie, even though that movie was written in the time of prehistoric man, you know, in the time of the ape man. What's this movie the kids like that has these little animals from... before time, you know?
Ice Age?
Mm-hmm. Ice Age and stuff like that. That's stupid. Stupid. But what are these people, see, I say the word, what are these animals doing in the movie? They're being people. They're acting like people. They're talking like people. They're living like people. They're responding to life circumstances like people. And there's always some little character who comes along in there who believes in himself and shows them the way, that they don't have to believe that it's going to fail. Now, what's the delight in that? The delight is when you live in the present. The delight is when you live in the now. The delight is when you do it now. And this is what Caesar constantly tells his clients. Live in the now. Now, some dogs were very bad. They bit people. They bit them a lot. They bit children, they bit people a lot. And so, what did Caesar do? He trained the dog to not be nervous and not respond out of anxiety or tension, but to be peaceful and anybody can come up to him and kick him and bump him and knock him, and he'll just look up at him saying, "Hi, how are you?" You know, untouched, because he's not going to let anybody push his button, you know. Now, dogs can do this after a very short training time, but instinctually they have this built into them. Instinctually, their instinct is to bite and to grab and to do. No. Mm-mm. Your instinct is to survive, you know, and yet you eat things that don't help you survive. Your instinct is to survive, and yet you drink liquor and beer and wine and scotch and all that stuff, and you're just utterly destroying your inside of your body. Your instinct is to survive, and yet you go around naming things good and bad. You name certain foods good, and you name certain foods bad, and you name what, that's what you got to eat. So why call it bad, you know? If the Indians living on pure rice alone were to call their rice evil, what would happen to those Indians? And I call them India Indians. They would die because they would poison the food that they did take in by their attitude. And we do this. We do this. People put poison in medicine bottles that are given, that are sold in the counters of drugstores. And so the drugstores got wind of this, and the pharmaceutical company got wind of this, and they put childproof caps and they put other things on it. Well, now, they not only did that, they announced it in the newspaper that somebody is doing these things. And so people who hadn't even thought of doing that, kids who thought, well, wouldn't that be fun to do something silly like that, you know? So they're doing things, but they wouldn't have done it if they hadn't promoted it, if they hadn't made a big story out of it, made a big movie out of it, you know? And the thing is, the detective stories that they used to have, well, they told everybody who wanted to be nefarious, who wanted to rob people and hurt people, how to go about doing it. They told them how to do it in there. And that's a training. Now, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Are we going to continue with that sort of an attitude in our life? Or are we going to let the past be past, live in the present, and name it and claim it for whatever we want it to be? Now, what is the present?
Now.
The present is now. And Ellen?
All is in divine order.
Ellen, you spell present how?
P-R-E-S-E-N-T, a present.
Yeah, well, you spelled it in that card you sent me, P-R-E-S-E-N-C-E. When we live in the presence,
okay.
And I thought, well, that was nice of you to say, I am the presence, and when you live in my presence, then nice things happen to you. But you meant present, and then now, you see. And you have to watch all your little words, because the nuances, sometimes they can lead you astray, you know. Mm-hmm. And when they lead you astray, they don't help. Now, instinct does not have to own us. These dogs who were angry and biting people and hurting people, they were trained. They were reconditioned. They were trained to be loving and gentle. And what Caesar does, he says, one of the first things I train any dog in, wherever I go, is to be at peace around children. Because they cannot be left alone with children if they're unpredictable. So that's the first thing he does, is trains them to be predictable around children. And of course, if they're predictable around children, they're predictable around everybody. And this is a very beautiful thing. But you see, this is where we stand now. The dog did a bad thing. It might have killed somebody. So, kill the dog. Well, stupid. Killing the dog isn't going to help anything. You train the dog to be a people dog. Rex is a people dog, my goodness sakes. He'd rather be with people than anything else in the world. He just loves people. Now, you can train a dog to be a people dog. And though it may have had a bad history, It may have had a bad rap. You put a new one in for it. You put a new cause in for it as a loving, gentle dog. Now, the past experiences, notwithstanding, so it should be, and we are so stupid that we take millions and billions of, and trillions of dollars every year to cage up our mean dogs instead of to train them into being useful dogs of, in society. Now, if we were to train people rather than put them in prison to be useful members of society, how wonderful that would be. It's not a matter of brainwashing them or anything. It's just a matter of training them. Hey, you want to live in society? Then this is what you have to do. You can't go killing people. You can't go hurting people. They don't say that. But why do people kill? Why does a dog become aggressive? Because he's tense. Because he's insecure. Because he feels he's not worth anything, you know? Now, why does Dorothea Zimmerman constantly say to me that if she found a $1,000 bill on the street, she'd pick it up and take it home, when she knows that the answer must be, no matter what I find, no matter what, I will not touch it if it doesn't belong to me. It does not belong to me. If someone lost it and I see that they lost it and I grab it and take it to them right away, that's one thing. But otherwise, I wouldn't touch it. If it's just laying in the street, I'd leave it laying there. It's not mine. I don't touch it. You understand? Mm-hmm. But she says she'll touch it. Now, that is a brain that would be hard to recondition. But now, why would Dorothea pick up money in the street that didn't belong to her after she fully agrees with what I say, even though she wouldn't practice it? Why? Well, when Dorothea was growing up, money was always taught to her to be very scarce. You always hold on to your money and you make it squeak. You make your pennies say ouch, you know. And when she was growing up, she made the best use of her money. She always bought wisely. When she was growing up, she always had a special account, her rainy day account. You heard of rainy day accounts? I mean, it's a universal concept. And how stupid. Rainy day accounts are making rainy days happen for us so that we need it. But now, what's your rainy day account? Your credit card. You know? And it gives you an unlimited credit of far beyond what you need at any one time. But they want you to spend it to pay interest on it and all their money. But again, if you use your credit card improperly, it's not beneficial to you. Now, how do we train people not to be worried about money? How do we train? Well, can you imagine if someday we have our society so wise that they create a school of the now, living in the now? If you're living in the now, you're not worried about anything. You're not worried about money. You're not worried about clothing. You're not worried about houses. You're not worried about anything. You're just enjoying the now. Even if you're living in the now, and you are living in the now, and the rain comes down, and you are 10 miles from home, you're not going to get home. So you're going to bundle up against the rain, or you're going to go into the drugstore and have a soda, or you're going to, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're going to get out of the rain somehow. Okay, go to the theater, you know. But what are you going to do? You get out of the rain and you live in the now. Do you say, oh my God, I'm so far from home, there's no way for me to get home, I'm going to die, this rain's going to give me the influenza and the cold and the flu and pneumonia and so on. Oh dear. No, this is what we do. Living in the now, you say, I'm all wet. I have a membership in the YMCA. I think I'll go over there and I'll take off my wet clothes and hang them up so they can dry, and I'll get in the steam bath and steam myself and maybe swim a little bit, and then if necessary, I'll buy a pair of tennis shorts over there and whatever, you know. But hey, But what if you don't have a membership in the Y? Well, go get one, you know. No, what if you don't have whatever, you know? Well, go and do it. There are bums who have no houses, and street people have no houses. What do they do when it rains? They go under a bridge, you know. And if they can't find a bridge, they go under a park bench. And if they can't find a park bench that doesn't leak, you know, then they go somewhere else. And if they can't find anything, they just lay out there in the open. And strange upon strange, they don't die. They don't die of pneumonia, of influenza, of colds and stuff. They just don't die. Because dying is not one of their alternatives. They live. Now, if we could train our dogs to be worthwhile citizens, we can certainly train ourselves. And how do you train your dog? What's one of the primary things you... Caesar had let this lady do it a great deal, but I don't agree with it. But, one of the primary things we don't do with our dogs is to say, stop, no, don't. We immediately distract their attention to something we want them to do. And we say, down, good dog, good dog. Whatever they do, we want them to do and good. Now, how do we raise our children?
Good.
Stop it! You're bad. You're spanking. You know, and all that nonsense. Well, as he said to the woman, he says, "Don't say no." That merely excites the dog and makes the dog more undependable. When you say peace, relax, then the dog relaxes. Then the child relaxes. Then the husband relaxes. He comes home, he says, sweetheart, I just lost my job, and we haven't a penny in the bank, and so forth and so on, and you know, we are in bad shape. And what does she say to her husband? And I'm saying it. What does she say to her husband? She says, sweetheart, we have each other. We had each other to start with, and we've had our ups and downs, but we've always got each other. And sweetheart, I believe in you. Now, wow! You know, the next step is up and beautiful. So this is what we can do. There is no bad child. There is no untrainable dog, cat, lion, tiger, whatever. What is it that, this is a good illustration, a very good illustration. I don't know if I should tell it to you. Very good illustration. Have a drink of coffee here. Anita found this little thing in the woods, and she brought it home. And she says, Ellen, what is this? Ellen says, I don't know. It's a fuzzy little ball of something, you know, a little teddy bear of some sort. And so then Anita takes it in her bedroom, takes care of it, and then a couple days later, Anita has it in the car with her as she's driving somewhere, and then she stops off at the forest ranger department. She says, do you know what this little ball of fur is? Oh my God, that's a lion, that's a tiger, that's a whatever, you know, something terrible, ferocious, you know, in the baby. And Anita says, oh, thank you. And then she goes home, and she treats this little thing like a little puppy dog. She treats this ferocious animal creature, as a baby, like a little puppy dog. And the months go by, and this little puppy dog keeps growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And next thing you know, the hot plate's falling off the stove, the chair, the table here. But the next thing you know, the little creature, let's call it a bobcat or something like that, this little creature is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and sleeping in Anita's room, and cuddling down next to Anita's head, snuggling in like a kitty cat, you know. And they say, that's a wild animal. That's not a tame animal. That's a wild animal. Yeah. The instincts are so current yet in that animal that is undependable. Well, you see, that's the word that we want to learn. Undependable. If she thinks it is undependable, unpredictable, then so it'll be. But if she takes away its wildness by her tameness and by her love and by her gentleness and by her expectation of it being a very responsible, loving creature, so it will be. And so, a few months later, she's back at the ranger station, and she's got her little Fluffy with her, you know, and the ranger says, "What are you doing with a bobcat in your car? Don't you realize they're unpredictable?" Mr. Ranger, I'm sorry I came here, but I wanted you to see my, quote, unpredictable, end quote, creature. Very predictable, very dependable, very wonderful. And that's true. No matter how big the animal is, however it is raised is how it's going to be. And when Anita raises it with love, it'll be love. When Anita raises it with anxiety or tension and thinking that it's not going to do this, there are trainers who tell you this and trainers who tell you that. Why? That's their experience. Some trainers are trained by their mommy and daddy that they're bad boys or bad girls, and so they are. And so they expect their animal creatures to be the same way. Bad boys and unpredictable, you know, because his brother was unpredictable, and so this creature might be unpredictable. Well, it does not have to be that way. Now, I suggest to each of you that since you don't really want to have a dog and a cat more than what we have, and you don't want to do that, that each one of you should have some toy that keeps you young, that keeps you dynamic, that keeps you interested in the magic of life, in all of the great things that are going on around you, and in all of the great things that the world has. And so I was thinking I should really buy a toy for each one of you to help you do this. Now, I was thinking an iPhone would be nice, but that's already done. What I was thinking, I am at 25 now, and I'm wanting to learn new tricks and new games and new things, so I have changed from my PC, which I know very well, into my Apple. And the Apple is always giving me confusions. It's not doing things the way the PC did. But that's only because I expected the Apple to act like a PC. Now, when I start expecting the Apple to act like an Apple, I will have magic taking place. Everybody in the country is saying Apple, and they're saying the iPhone, and they're saying these things are great, they're saying these things are beautiful. And then one guy had the audacity of saying, "The iPhone has a major flaw in it. It can be cracked by hackers. They can get into the iPhone." And I read, flashed down about a dozen comments where, "Oh, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear," you know, putting in codes, putting in passwords and stuff. And then one man said, "So what? I haven't got anything on my iPhone that I'm trying to keep secret. And if I'm going to leave my iPhone lying around where someone else can take it, then I deserve to have it being taken, you know. But if I treat my iPhone like my child, or like something very important for me, and keep it with me always, I'm not going to let it be somewhere where it can be misused. But also, if I think it's going to be misused, it's going to be misused." And I thought, my goodness, you're a metaphysician for sure. But that's true. That's true. So who knows what's going to be next on your menu, on your docket of staying young, vital, dynamic, alive, living in the now, and having the time of your life. So think about it. And remember, if you ever say no to a new experience, you're announcing how dead you are. I love you. I love you. I love you.
Have
a wonderful morning.
Love you.